time nine. That's like the cannabis line. I'm outside the cab this time. I leave his head attached to the chain and put the chain back on the bicycle thing. I'm in a tricycle lane. Bubble up, double cuts, books in the frame. I'm trying to get my flow better like G1. They said it's getting hot, they can see none. You see green, see sun, see saw. I never saw the movie unless you took the ballpark 1, 2, 3, and 4. 5, 6 was misplaced. I'm bugging out on the split. I sound like this when I'm taking a risk. Taking the train, you start off on the 5, end up on the 6. I was on the deeps, switched off to the F. It was moving like the A with a CB breath. I'm CB4, you CB left. You see me more, I need more, see more. Feed me ore or iron. Iron or ore, I'm flying with war. My guns ain't metallic, they iron and ore. My vitamins turn me into a carnival war. Back to them Tyson vitamins, them irons is for.
That's the crazy legs watching live.
Move through with the spin beat. Rock steady, open up your head if it's empty. What up, Fable? I pop when it's able. I say salad, I salad my maker, make it able. Shake the bacon with the chicken, make the table. I was begging beats on table in the high school lunchroom. Lunchroom crashing, crashing. I was over there scheming all my English secrets. After that, it's more booty in the casket. Primo, this beat has nice fashion. Stop fronting and play the backing. Give me one so I can put all Royce the 5-9 rhymes in the casket. Picture me if I write, that's like you if you left. We can stay right here, slumming light in the breath. I don't gotta roll up naturally. I got the nuts flow to make you give a cash is cheap. That's a slugger, a bugger, a thugger is ill. My boot camp, solo, so flow with skill. I'm on WBAI late night like Bob Law. Eating the corn in a car raw, a dinosaur, artifact and more. I don't write this, these is my white lines, but they would call them black thoughts. I have funk in the building, like, yo, Flex, we gotta get out of here. See, Raze is next, we on the 58-minute request. You can't see now, a lot of these cats is free version, talking freestyle. I jump turnbuckles, earn huckles, shooting that fire if it's flow with burnt knuckles. I'm looking like the human torch on the block, holding my... Dog that out, don't walk a lot. I said spaniel, but I forgot to say the move with the blocker and turn into a hot shot of rocker. Cracking your shell, I smell lobster. All you wanna do is get off the top hopper. No, Jimmy, no stingy to be. That's so in me. Hip hop flows out of you, that's why it's in me. My solo thoughts keep me fresh, dipped in polo sport. What you going on the pogo course? That mean pogo course. You don't decipher a clown? That means everything is straight up and down. Raise walls, MTA, you suck. Better, New York City, boycott the station.
Let them know about the new album.
We gotta go. The album's in stores now.
The
album's online right now. I love C. Raise Walls. Peace, Queen. That's the science of the day. Peace to the Queen Omaya. Know what I mean? Walk with the Father Law. Justice. Peace to man, woman, and
shout
child.
To Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico. Let's go. Crazy Legs. I love you. You know what it is. Thank you for what you did every day.
Let's
Rebel
go.
Diaz. Radio.
You're listening to WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM. My name is Bill Samuels, founder of NYPeoplesConvention.org. WBAI is New York's leader in progressive talk. Whether the issue is prison reform, education reform, the legalization of marijuana, or women's rights, the people's issues are covered on these airways. So stay tuned for the best in leading-edge progressive ideas and analysis. And remember to support independent media financially.
Welcome to Health Action here on listener-supported community radio, WBAI in New York. I'm Mark Hannay, Director of Metro New York Healthcare for All, and a member of the Health Action Collective that brings you this program every week. In the first half of the program, we're going to be taking a look at the healthcare issues facing the Congress as it reconvenes for its 2018 session. There's lots of stuff left that they never got to in 2017, plus some new stuff coming at us. Because of the tax cut bill they just enacted and other stuff. So we'll get a prognosis about all of that. And Catherine Davis will be here with an interview in the second half of the program. But first, we'll start with the Health Action News for this week, taken from stories posted to KaiserHealthNews.org. The Associated Press reports that in bountiful tweets and self-praise, President Trump plays up his, quote, tremendous progress, close quote, in improving health care for veterans in his first year, but says that his claims fall short of reality. Trump's initiatives have yet to show any meaningful impact, and his campaign promises of expanding access to doctors and adding mental health specialists for military veterans are still unfulfilled. Several of the 2017 accomplishments highlighted in a Trump tweet last week are largely symbolic. Proclamations routinely signed by presidents or initiatives that haven't taken full effect or were later acknowledged by the Department of Veterans Affairs to be largely unneeded. Trump often speaks about his commitment to veterans, a group that backed him by nearly 2-1 in the 2016 elections. In a tweet last week, he referenced an Instagram video describing 8 accomplishments that show Trump is fighting for our veterans. Of the 8 accomplishments the video cited, 2 are ceremonial proclamations recognizing National Veterans and Military Families Month and National Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day. 2 are pieces of legislation that extended the troubled Veterans Choice Program on a temporary basis. This became necessary because the Trump administration repeatedly miscalculated the amount of taxpayer dollars available to pay for care from private doctors outside the VA system when veterans have to endure long waits for treatment at VA medical centers. A 5th claim involves the use of telehealth, a step letting doctors practice medicine across state lines using digital technology. Announced in August, it has yet to take full effect because a proposed VA regulation hasn't yet been completed. A 6th claim refers to legislation that streamlines the appeals process for disability compensation claims within the Veterans Administration. This step has had limited impact so far. The law, which won't take effect until February 2019, largely applies to new disability claims and not the over 470,000 pending claims. The other 2 initiatives mentioned in the video make it easier for the VA to discipline employees. The department has pointed to more than 1,300 employees who have been fired under Trump's watch. Because their infractions are not detailed in public documents, the impact on veterans' care is not fully known. The newspaper The Hill reports that advocacy groups backed by the politically active brothers Charles and David Koch are launching a campaign urging Congress to pass national legislation allowing terminally ill patients to request access to experimental drugs to the Food and Drug Administration, but it hasn't yet been fully approved. Nearly 40 states have this law, known as a right to try, already on their books. The Koch brothers group Freedom Partners, in partnership with Americans for Prosperity, say federal legislation is needed to assuage patients' fears that the federal government will override state laws. The new push, launched last week, consists of a formal lobbying effort, digital ads, social media, and more. Additionally, the group sent a letter last week to House Energy and Commerce Chairman Greg Walden, urging him to prioritize passing the bill out of his committee and sending it to the full House for a vote. In August, the measure passed the Senate by unanimous consent. The bill would let terminal ill patients use medication as long as the drug completed the Food and Drug Administration's preliminary testing, a small-scale clinical trial, and is undergoing further clinical trials at the agency. The legislation has a key ally in the White House, namely Vice President Mike Pence, who signed a similar law when he was governor of Indiana. However, opponents of the measure have concerns about using drugs the FDA hasn't fully approved, saying it bypasses the agency's authority and could hurt drug development efforts and patient safety. They also point out that the legislation doesn't necessarily mean terminally ill patients will be able to try the unapproved drugs, as drug companies might not provide them with the medicine, and the insurers might not cover the costs. The FDA has a compassionate use program which lets physicians apply and the FDA and receive FDA approval to let a seriously ill patient receive an experimental drug. Supporters of Right to Try laws say that the process is onerous and time-consuming, and they argue patients who are terminally ill should have this resource at their disposal to try medicines that could save their lives, particularly because the drug approval process is often lengthy. And finally, the AP reports that when President Trump's new nominee for HHS Secretary, Alex Azar, was a top executive at Eli Lilly, the patent on his blockbuster Cialis drug was soon to expire. So Lilly tested it on kids. The drug maker believed that the erectile dysfunction drug might also help a rare and deadly muscle-wasting disease that afflicts young boys. The drug didn't work for it, but under a law that promotes pediatric research, Eli Lilly was able to extend the Cialis patent anyway for 6 months, which was worth a lot when the medication brings in over $2 billion in revenue a year to the company. Critics say the brand name drug makers are gaming the patent system, finding all sorts of ways to protect monopolies and delay competition from generics. Mr. Azar, former president of Eli Lilly's U.S. operations, is now poised to become the top U.S. health official. He says he opposes such delaying tactics. However, the tension between his past actions as a drug company executive and his likely future as the nation's top health official are evident in both the Cialis story and in Eli Lilly's tripling of its price of insulin. Questions about his commitment to rein in skyrocketing drug costs, an unfilled campaign pledge by President Trump, are likely to dominate his confirmation hearing before the Senate Finance Committee this week. The full Senate is likely to vote on his nomination to lead the Health and Human Services Department later this month. As a drug company executive, Azar's job was to find treatments and make money for the company. The Cialis experiment was legal, and Lilly's competitors engage in similar practices. Critics say that his record at Lilly crossed lines and should be disqualifying. Azar's mostly Republican supporters say that he was well-regarded in high-level HHS jobs in the George W. Bush administration before joining Lilly. And they say Azar understands the system from the inside and out, which makes him particularly well-suited to address skyrocketing drug prices. And that's the Health Action News for this week. We'll be back with our first interview segment, taking a look at healthcare issues facing Congress as it reconvenes for its 2018 session. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Health Action. I'm Mark Hannay. In our first interview segment for this week's program, we're going to be taking a look at what's up for Congress this year. They're reconvening this week. It's a new year. To some extent, they've got a new slate, but they've got a lot of carryover business from last year that they still got to deal with, and we're going to catch up on some of that and look into the crystal ball. Joining us is Margarita George, co-executive director with Healthcare for America Now, and Mary Clark, Southern Tier regional director with Citizen Action of New York. Welcome back to Health Action, Margarita and Mary.
Thanks, Mark.
Welcome, Mark.
When we both had you on, I guess, a few months ago, we were in the midst of just starting to reach full tilt on the tax bill fight. So let's take a look at how that all kind of fell out when all was said and done. In general, Margarita, what happened in that bill, and specifically anything directly impacting healthcare programs?
Sure. Well, the nutshell of what happened in the bill is that the Republicans passed a package that will hand trillions of dollars of tax breaks over to primarily the rich and corporations. So that's not a surprise. We've been talking about that on the last show. About 83% of the tax cut in the bill will go to the richest 1% over the course of 10 years. The bill is starts this year. It goes to 2027. The tax cuts for corporations in the bill, and that includes a lot of healthcare corporations like insurance companies and prescription drug companies, those tax breaks are permanent. The corporate tax breaks are permanent. The tax breaks for the rich are 10-year tax cuts, but there is already some conversation about making those tax breaks permanent as well. So it's a pretty bad bill. A lot of people know that one of the ways that they're paying for the corporate tax breaks in this bill is by repealing a key provision of the Affordable Care Act, the individual mandate. It's a really important provision that keeps health insurance affordable for a lot of families. The Congressional Budget Office estimates that about 13 million more people will lack insurance because of that provision in the bill, and that provision is going to raise rates by about 10% for people that get their health care through the individual market in the Affordable Care Act exchanges. So lots of impact on health care. I would argue that it's actually more direct than some of these others. One indirect impact that we didn't see in the bill, but we're going to see it this year, is the pay for this bill. So the way that they're going to afford this bill, because the bill generated a $1.5 trillion deficit, is going to be cuts to Medicaid and Medicare. And just the fact that this bill has generated a $1.5 trillion deficit is going to trigger automatic cuts in Medicare, what we call pay-go cuts. So that's $25 billion in cuts to Medicare a year because of the deficit generated by the bill. We know Speaker Paul Ryan is already talking about the massive, what he's calling a welfare reform package, but largely cuts to Medicaid and social safety net that is going to be required in order to pay for this increase in the deficit.
Great. And Mary, the bill was passed on a strictly partisan basis in both houses of Congress. How did our senators and representatives do here in New York on the bill? How did that vote turn out?
Well, it was a mixed bag here in New York. We had most of our downstate representatives, I'm talking about our Republican representatives here, Mr. Faso, Representative King, Zeldin, Donovan, and also Stefanik. Those five actually voted no against the tax reform. A lot of their motivation, or some of their motivation, was because of the SALT tax, or the state and local taxes being restricted in terms of to about $10,000 to be able to write off from your federal taxes. So those five actually voted, as we see, correctly against the tax bill, where the other primarily upstate representatives, Katko, Tenney, Claudia Tenney, Tom Reed, and Mr. Collins, the four of them voted yes in favor of them. So, like I said, it was really kind of a mixed bag, very geographically motivated, based on mostly the SALT reimbursement, the state and local tax reimbursement.
And there was a lot of advocacy directed at all nine of them, but particularly those four, because they were the shakiest of the bunch. How did they respond to the concerns that advocates raised about impacts on healthcare and social service programs and so forth?
I mean, we had in November and December, we had 38 actions throughout New York State in all nine of the districts. So week after week, we were out there talking about various impacts, various issues. People were all, you know, sharing their concerns. We had faith leaders. We had teachers. We had a whole variety of health advocates, all sharing how this will impact. I think, you know, it was clear that, you know, they were, particularly Stefanik actually seemed to respond more to that. And somehow Katko, Tenney, Reed, Collins seemed to actually ignore the impacts that are going to be facing our struggling communities upstate, which is a little disconcerting because these areas will be mostly impacted by the adverse effects that Margarita speaks of, is they're going to try to make up this, you know, the deficit that they've created, $1.5 trillion, by cutting programs, social safety nets, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, food stamps, you name it, housing, to make up for that. And that's most alarming because that will impact these communities that are struggling, upstate communities, the most.
Margarita, at the end of the summer, when sort of finally the Republican congressional effort to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act died, there was a bunch of issues that sort of raised to the fore, healthcare issues that everyone thought was going to be kind of dealt with pretty quickly because they had, each of those issues had pretty strong bipartisan support and interest. Let's tick through those. First of all, it's been getting a lot of notice in media, is the child health insurance program. What did they do about that, if anything?
Well, they had a deadline on September 30th to reauthorize the children's health insurance program. It's health care for about 9 million of the country's poorest kids. It's not a huge program. It's about $8, $9 billion, so really chump change compared to the huge deficit that they just created. They kept procrastinating and putting it off and putting it off. We all thought that it was going to get resolved as part of the continuing resolution package to fund government, but what ultimately happened was the year ended, and they still had not resolved upon reauthorization of the Children's Health Insurance Program. Huge challenge because states are going to run out of money for this program, and some states have already run out. A lot of states will run out by the end of January, and it's unclear that they're going to take any congressional action in January. They can't agree on a funding mechanism. The Republicans are proposing that the way to fund health care for these 9 million kids is to cut health care for their parents or for seniors. Democrats obviously are not in support of that type of funding mechanism. They don't think it makes any sense to be cutting health care for other members of the family in order to give kids health insurance. And of course, given that there seems to be plenty of money for tax breaks for millionaires, the Democrats, I think, rightly believe that the Republicans can find money for this really important program.
And also the other thing that sort of ran out of money was our community health centers. Where's that at?
Right. The health extenders bill. Really, we haven't heard much about it. Again, everybody expects that the health extenders for community health centers and clinics are going to get rolled into this continuing resolution, along with things, for instance, like relief to Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. A lot of that relief money is also health care money and additional $1 million for Medicaid. So all of these things that have been hanging out there, and they come up periodically when there's a deadline around the continuing resolution that funds government, but so far nothing really has been resolved. The next deadline on that is January 19th up here in D.C. We're all sort of listening, waiting, watching. We know that the Democratic leadership and Republican leadership have been negotiating back and forth. We hope to see some of these things resolved in that package that they're going to vote on January 19th.
Mary, a big issue here from New York for our hospitals has been the disproportionate share money that comes in for particularly safety net hospitals. How has that been addressed so far, if at all?
Talked about the community health centers, about the CHIP funding, bumping money till March 1st. They have done nothing with the disproportionate share money, which gives millions and millions of dollars to almost all our hospitals, particularly our rural hospitals, our urban center hospitals that fund a lot of health care for people who are uninsured. This is going to adversely affect all our hospitals in throughout New York State, and they have made they speak of it, but they have made no indication that they're going to be addressing this, or at least they haven't in these last go rounds. So we're really pushing hard for the January 19th deadline and hope that it gets addressed, because they did speak to CHIP and to and to the community health centers, but they haven't spoke at all in regard to the hospital funding.
And finally, Margarita, in the middle of October, the Trump administration decided they were going to stop making payments to insurance companies that help keep out-of-pocket cost payments low for low-income people. These would be for deductibles and co-pays and like that. What's happening with all of that?
Well, unfortunately, again, we thought we would see some resolution on the cost-sharing reductions on these payments. These are reimbursements to insurance companies. And insurance companies pay the money up front. The CSR is reimbursed, and they help lower costs for people buying health care on exchanges. And, you know, what started as a pretty bipartisan conversation around the need to do something to remedy the fact that the president said that he wasn't going to make these payments anymore, Republicans and Democrats have come together around the Marie Alexander bill. Once this tax bill started to move forward and the Republicans decided to put the repeal of the ACA in the bill, those bipartisan negotiations really broke down. And so now we're at a moment where there doesn't seem to be much action on that bill. It's unclear whether it's going to move forward or not. And because the Republicans have put repeal into their tax bill, the impact of addressing the cost-sharing reduction payments has to be is going to be less, right? That bill needs to be tweaked to reflect the current situation that we're in, where the Republicans have done more damage to the Affordable Care Act than just the withholding of the cost-sharing reduction. We expect to hear more about the cost-sharing reductions and the Murray Alexander bill. And I'll just remind people that are following this closely, a really critical senator in this debate, Senator Collins from Maine, voted for the tax bill on the condition that Republicans would pass the Murray Alexander bill. It was one of the things that she wanted in a deal that she cut with Republicans in order to get her vote. So far, doesn't seem like there's going to be much progress. That's going to be really closely watched.
And Mary, here in New York, that issue has a particular unique aspect for us in terms of the funding for our essential program. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we have like some 700,000 people on the essential program, which provides healthcare coverage for primarily, working poor adults that are beyond the Medicaid expansion level. And so 700,000 people can virtually we fund it through the through this mechanism. And what we were fearful of, that we will not have the money needed to provide this coverage to about 700,000 people here in New York. So it's a real important issue for us in New York.
So here we are, it's 2018, a new year. Congress is reconvening this week. First thing up, Margarita, is the new Health and Human Services Secretary nomination. What's the prognosis for that?
Well, the second confirmation hearing is tomorrow, Tuesday. The candidate, Mr. Azar, is a former Eli Lilly, huge, one of the top 10 pharma companies, pharmaceutical manufacturing companies. And, you know, there's obviously a lot of concern that we have about how he's going to function in this role. We've seen HHS, which has traditionally been the protector of, provider of, enforcer of healthcare laws in America, really become an instrument for eroding the coverage. And we saw all the shenanigans that HHS perpetrated during the enrollment of the ACA. I think there are a lot of us that are really concerned about what's going to happen if Azar is confirmed in this position. Is he going to actually do his job as HHS secretary and protect healthcare programs and enforce the law as it is? Or is he going to serve the interests of the prescription drug company? Is he going to be willing to stand up to President Trump if President Trump does in fact continue this crusade to do everything he can to undermine the ACA?
And there is talk in media about continuing the fight to fully repeal the Affordable Care Act. As you mentioned at the beginning, they repealed this individual mandate portion as part of the tax bill, but the rest of the law still stands. Do they really have the stomach to do this again? Or attempt
it
again?
They're definitely getting a lot of industry pressure. I will say there are Republicans who are like, hey, enough's enough, it's an election year. But there are also certainly, this I think exposes some of the divisions we've seen during these repeal debates, there are certainly very committed Republicans in the party who feel strongly that they made a promise to their base to repeal the law, and they have to follow through. And as you said, most of the ACA, including many of the important regulatory measures, right, the things that stop insurance companies from gouging people, from discriminating against people with pre-existing conditions, those features of the law are still in place. And many of the insurance industry players want them gone, right? They want to go back to the old days where they could charge anybody anything they want to get insurance that might not even be insurance that covers what they need. So I think we're going to continue to see attempts to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They will take different shapes. They may be standalone bills, or they may be more piecemeal efforts like what we've seen in the tax bill. I'm fully prepared to see other attempts to dismantle pieces of the law. And one thing I would just remind people of is that a huge part of this law is Medicaid expansion. And so the Republicans have signaled over and over and over again that they are not done by a long shot with Medicaid. They're going to do a lot to Medicaid. Attack on Medicaid will absolutely weaken the Affordable Care Act. Most people that got expanded coverage under the law got it through Medicaid. So another really important thing to watch.
Mary, as Margarita mentioned, it's an election year, and they'll all be up. How are things looking for the New York nine that we've got, the nine Republicans in the House?
Well, I think all the New York nine seem to have, some strong challengers. And I think what we want to do is educate our voters and our constituents out there in every district to say whose side have they been on in the tax vote, in the health care vote, and really start to educate people so we can have people going into the voting booth really supporting people who've supported us on health care, on tax reform, on everything. And so we want to really, we're going to be putting together a big education campaign from door to door to phoning to whatever, where we're going to really mass mobilize people to really encourage them to vote for people who vote and support health care for all and support, not giving away all our money to the very rich and the corporations at the expense of the rest of us in terms of our programs that we need. So that'll be gearing up this year, and where people stood and voted on this, we're going to try to hold them very much accountable for what they've done. And so that's our really going to be our game plan.
So, Margarita, in our last minute or two here, looking forward, the big fight will be another budget fight for the new budget coming, which that process will start in February, March, and April. What are we potentially going to see in that context?
Well, we're going to see a big spending cuts bill, likely through the same kind of expedited process that we've seen on repeal bills and on this tax bill, the reconciliation process. It's a very difficult process for our side because it's very hard to get any information. Things move very, very quickly. So we expect a pretty large bill. Remember that the spending cuts bill that Speaker Ryan is talking about doing in the House is really about addressing the $1.5 trillion deficit that was created by the tax bill. Now, to get to $1.5 trillion, you have to make some really big cuts. Big programs like Medicaid will be most impacted, but that certainly won't be the only program. We're also going to be seeing proposed cuts in other critical programs like Meals on Wheels and food stamps and housing and education, pretty much everything that you can imagine. We have a model probably folks have seen before. We expect that what Speaker Ryan is going to propose looks a lot like budgets that he's proposed over the last 5 or 6 years, where we know he's been pretty laser focused on dismantling Medicaid and cutting a huge chunk out of that program.
Ooh, okay. Oh, so noted. We got our work cut out for us. We've been taking a look in the crystal ball at what faces Congress this year as it reconvenes for its 2018 session. Any quick closing thoughts, Mary, from the New York side of things?
Yeah, I think when you talk about like these kind of cuts that are, they really adversely affect New York State. If we start looking at
severe cuts that they're talking, you know, $1 trillion worth of cuts to Medicaid. It means billions of dollars of cuts, estimated about $5 billion in cuts to New York State funding for Medicaid. That blows huge holes in our budget. We're already facing a budget deficit. If we add these things coupled with cuts to Medicaid, funding of health care to New York State, it will just adversely affect us astronomically, more so than most other states.
And that'll end up in Albany's lap, and that'll be a future discussion for a future program. We've been speaking with Margarita George, co-executive director of Healthcare for America Now, and Mary Clark, Southern Tier regional director with Citizen Action of New York. Thank you, Margarita and Mary, for joining us again here on Health Action.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Okay.
And we'll be back with our second segment in a moment with Catherine Davis. Stay tuned.
Hello, you're listening to Help Action in New York on WBAI at 99.5 FM. I'm Catherine Davis, and as it happens, I am in studio live this morning for the second half of this program, and I thought it would be interesting to have a conversation. You're welcome to join us at 347-335-0818. I'm in studio with Matt Mazza, and we are going to have a bit of a conversation about, we'll discover that it's going to be just a little bit of freeform radio and maybe a chance to take a little bit of a breath and take a step back from the crises and emergencies and stress and worries that face us every day, and just take a moment to breathe, relax, and enjoy each other's company. So stay tuned. Again, this is Catherine, and let's see, Matt, which mic are you on? Say hello.
Hello, this is the middle mic.
Gotcha. Yeah, I just put all three up and see which one your voice turned up on. So, yes, this is Health Action. Health Action is a program that brings you a variety of perspectives. Of course, Mark Hannay works a lot on policy, and you heard a segment from his work. Bob Lederer tends to do research and political issues with regard to health. And I, Catherine, also a co-host of this program, tend to be maybe a little bit more laid back. And I am more working in the field of inspiration, self-healing, determination, you know, empowering oneself with choices that we can make in our individual lives is more in the line that of the work that I do. And really, it tends to be this kind of interviews that I enjoy. But also part of being healthy is cultivating real relationships. I was, Matt, I was talking to a friend the other day, and they were telling me, and we were actually talking about how much people have become dependent upon social media as a way of communicating. I know this is not an issue for you because you don't even have email, but but you do have a phone.
This is true.
No, but you know what happens is that it's so easy to get drawn into the seduction of having one of these smartphones, and they're actually not very healthy. You know, they have microwave radiation and radio waves that if you hold it too close to your body, it has medical side effects. And if you, you know, it can have an impact on your eyes. It can create tumors in your brain. You know, if you wear it close to your genitals, it could have an impact. I mean, if you wear it close to your organs, it will have an impact. So it's actually quite a dangerous instrument. But what happens is that people become so drawn into the smartphone. And even if you're a professional, you end up being almost tied to the phone as if you have to be available to answer every message, every email, every response. And you want to try to impact, on a professional level. But also it seems that people are very much attached to communicating with these things as if, you know, the likes and whoever is looking at your messages and paying attention, it just seems to be very interesting to me that people communicate sort of in code through the phones. You know, the messages are all coded in using just characters rather than spelling words out. And so it just seems like this whole seductive little thing that people become attached to and get drawn into. It's very seductive. But what happens is that people don't have real relationships as much as we maybe did have when all we had was a phone to leave a message on, and if a person picked up the message, they'd call you back. And it wasn't this instantaneous being drawn into the social media complex. And people used to get together and talk and do things, and I'm sure we still do. But I find that these smartphones really do detract from energy, for me in terms of focus. You know, so I might be doing my laundry, and instead of doing my laundry, I'm looking at a video, you know, that kind of thing. So I just thought it would be interesting to invite our listeners to, if they want to call in, that's 347-335-0818. And you can have a, if you have a comment about, you know, a different kind of health, sort of a social help in our having healthy relationships with people. And I'm wondering if people are feeling the impact of social media.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I was one of the last people when I was with my life partner. She was a secretary. She worked for lawyers. She was a very good legal secretary. And, you know, when we were together, it was pre-answering machines even.
Whoa. Wait a minute. You're dating yourself, but that's okay.
Well, when I was living on the Lower East Side, you know, I had a phone, an answering machine. Occasionally, somebody would have one. And when I lived together with my life partner, you know, we had a phone. And then when they started coming, the machine started coming. I said, "Matt, I want one. Oh, I don't want one of those things." I was one of the last ones, the last holdout. Finally, we got one. And yes, it used to use cassettes. These little tiny cassettes.
I remember those, yeah.
Yeah. And they used to tear all the time. The tapes used to. But anyway, then they went. Now it's all digital, this kind of stuff. But I had, for the longest time, I paid for an answering service. You know, a live operator. You know, you'd pay so much a month. And you'd have a separate number, and you could use that number, and people would call it, and a live operator would take a message. And I would call in periodically, speak to them, and they would give me the messages. So that's how I did it. Until finally we broke down and got a machine. I'll tell you, you know, the whole internet. By the way, Gary Null, it was yesterday. Well, day before yesterday now. It's Thursday now. Gary Null had a very interesting program on artificial intelligence. Oh, the second half had a very interesting guest. You know, talking about cars that drive themselves. You have programs now that write themselves. They improve themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know how they did it. So it's getting very, very interesting and almost scary in a way. And, you know, it's really a mixed bag. Because the internet, it's fantastic. You punch in any particular artist, pianist, and there's stuff. You could listen to a recording of Chopin, etc., etc. That is just phenomenal. But it put Joseph Patelson, a music publisher, out of business. Because now you go online and you get this music. You can download it free. So it's a very, very mixed bag. You know, aside from the technology and the side effects of microwaves and what have you.
Yeah, there's radiation coming from the screen. And I think it wouldn't necessarily be as great a danger if people were not addicted to these forms of technology or have them relevant to the workplace. So people who work all day on computers or people who are gamers sitting in front of a machine or people who are just like to watch videos, because a lot of people don't even have TVs. They do all their media enjoyment on the computer screen. But then even it applies to the big screen TVs. They have also radiation that comes through those screens. The energy has an impact on our brain waves, has an impact on our sleep patterns. So there's the technology really does and can interfere with our natural physiology. So that's one impact. But the other impact is the addictive quality of projecting our life force into the expression of technology. And so from that, I mean, we have a tendency to enjoy the screen more than we actually enjoy our life.
In other words, we're living virtual existences.
Yeah, living virtual existences, and not just virtual existences for the enjoyment. It's a virtual existence for our work. And so, what happens is that we have a tendency to, because of the immediacy, it's hard to pull away from it. It's hard to ever stop working. So you're working all day. You have the phone, you know, checking your phone. You get home. You check your email. So there's a way in which we are depriving ourselves of a natural existence. And it has an impact on our mental health as well as our physical health. So I really feel it's imperative for all of us to think about prioritizing health in a different way or in an optimal way. So because we live in these societies, this society and the workplace where it's very, very competitive, you'll find that people have a tendency to deal with health issues, deal with stress by going to the gym. So they'll go to the gym and they'll run and they'll punch bags or they'll cycle and they're really still racing. So that there's a way in which you're burning up energy and that might keep your body trim, but it isn't keeping you healthy because you're never really slowing down. You're never really breathing with nature. You're never really giving yourself a chance to experience your being as a natural being, as you did when you were a child, as you did when you were an infant, as you will again when you become much older. You know, so we have a tendency to just keep racing, and that doesn't give us space to really absorb and enjoy life in a way that's meaningful. I was having dinner with a friend just the other day, and she was telling me that her phone needed repair. And she had to, put it in the shop to repair. So she said she didn't have it for 2 days, just 2 days. And she was really amazed that this was the most relaxing 2 days she's had in years. Because she could just breathe and didn't have to be available every moment of the day. It didn't have to, wasn't drawn into that distraction for 2 whole days. And she was able to rest. And she was able to reconnect to herself. And I have another friend who has gotten into the habit of turning the phones off at night, turning technology off at night, and has begun to recover from insomnia and other kind of stress. And so what I'm suggesting is that we really need to detach from technology. And as you were talking about artificial intelligence, I can't imagine the health impact of having that artificial technology implanted inside of your body or inside of your brain.
Well, is it?
You know, because to me, that would be like a Frankenstein nightmare to have technology in your brain where you couldn't even find a space to connect with your deeper self, with your soul, to really be able to connect with nature, because the technology, even though it's in our hand in a phone, it interferes. The waves and the energy vibration interferes with our with the functioning of our brain, the functioning of our hearts.
Well, you know, this is a very, very interesting movie. Actually, Jim Freund, host of Hour of the Wolf, he gave me the file. And yes, I confess, I watched it on my computer.
Yeah.
But it's called Her. And this deals with a futuristic sci-fi movie with artificial intelligence. With this guy, he sets up an account. We just want to ask you a few questions. Would you rather have a male or a female voice? You know, questions like that, and sets it up. And it's like he's meeting somebody for the first time. It's like a person. And the other day, it was last week, I think, Jim showed me his Google phone. And he says, "Okay, Google, what do you think of Scarlett O'Hara?" "Well, very talented actress, but I'm not a very good judge." "Wow, that's a real response."
Yeah, technology has come a long way. People enjoy it. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with it, except for the potential health challenges that comes through the emissions of the technology, but also the potential sort of addiction and dumbing down of the human species when, for instance, phones and all this technology has GPS, you know, technology that tells you where to turn left, where to turn right. And I think that can become useful. But my experience with GPS is it doesn't give you the most direct route, but also it sort of shaves away our own intuitive capacities to see things, to move, to learn, to be aware. And there's something about it that I just don't like. Being instructed in every turn, every way to go. It just feels like a loss of, for me personally, it feels like a bit of a loss of something in terms of who I am as a being and the adventure of life and turning a wrong corner and discovering something new. So there's just something about technology that for me feels very harsh. Technology tends to feel a little bit harsh from my perspective, because we have such a deep loss of nature. It's very difficult to be anywhere in the world where it's just silent and you just hear the sounds of nature. I'm sure there are spaces still like that, but it's a difficult thing to really connect into that natural space. And I feel that people don't have enough of a consciousness of all of the degradation of the planet Earth, you know, the fracking and all the things that are happening to potentially degrade the Earth. People are not paying attention really to the climate changes that are happening, you know, the increased snows, like this whole thing with the up in Massachusetts with the ocean actually freezing. Did you see that?
That I haven't seen.
Yeah, so they have situations where they have snow in the Sahara Desert. I mean, these are things that are very unusual happening. Lots of floods. There's a lot of issues happening. Lots and lots of earthquakes. A lot of earthquakes are connected to the fracking operations. So there's just so much happening, and I feel that as a human culture, we're so disconnected. I mean, we all care about these things. We talk about climate change, and we talk about how bad fracking is, but I don't think that people are really connecting to some of the serious problems that we have. A lot of people don't believe in you know, contrails or chemtrails, but I've certainly seen it to the extent that it is blocking the sky. The day will start sunny, you'll see these crosshatch clouds, then they start to bloom out into a huge cloud, and before you know it, the sky is blocked off.
Well, you know, Jeff Brady's film, Hacking the Planet,
yeah.
Dane Wigington, he just elucidates what's happening.
Yeah.
And this propaganda, he shows you like a Disney movie or something like that. There's a scene, and kids are watching. This is a scene, and then you see a chemtrail. So this implants the idea in a young child's mind that, oh, that's normal. It's background.
Well, I think that there are many young people who would think that it is normal, because it's been going on for a very long time. It's much more serious, but it's interesting, like, you know, you can, when you date yourself and you recognize that you've been on the planet for a long time, I can visibly see the changes in the colors of the sun, the changes in the quality of clouds, the lowness of the clouds as opposed to, you know, I just remember things being quite different than they are now. So it's just, you know, I just think that it's important for us as a human culture to really, in a physical, visceral way, reconnect with our beings, our physical bodies, reconnect to our world to see what's really happening, and reconnect to each other so that we can begin to look at each other eye to eye, you know, and have a sense of who we are, as opposed to a few characters in a text message being the quality of our relationships. And so I would hope that people will consider just expanding themselves to the point where they can indeed do something, that they can engage in their life in a different way.
Well,
to be more humane to oneself, actually.
So take a walk across Central Park sometime.
Yeah, Central Park, Prospect Park, the Bronx. I mean, there are parks all over the city that we can find in. But even if you don't have a park, you can put a cut flower on your desk and breathe with the, and gaze into the stillness of the flower. That's what Eckhart Tolle recommends. So that if we just detach from technology and begin to give ourselves spaces that will allow us to be that natural being, then I think that we can survive the technological revolution without losing our sense of humanity if we purposely maintain that space to be a natural human being.
Well, you know, let these things be our servant, not our master. Exactly. That is the chief message, I think, of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Yeah, well, as it turns out with AI, we might be the Frankenstein. We might become those Frankensteins. So we're just about out of time, and I invite you to stay tuned for Hour of the Wolf with Jim Freund. Excuse me, I wanted to remind you, coming up, actually I'll be doing a fundraiser for BAI very soon, so people will hear more about that. It'll be downstairs at the Commons. But for those of you who would like to engage with some of the practices of meditation and relaxation and all that kind of stuff, I invite you to join us at the Open Center in New York City. The Open Center is on 30th Street. And next Thursday, I believe it's next Thursday. Let me open up my calendar. Next Thursday, the 18th of January, will be a free introductory class from 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the New York Open Center. So I invite you to join me there. I'm doing a really cool series, and it is all about healing. You know, this whole idea of healing, and it's to reduce stress and anxiety, remedy practices and routines for self-healing. And it's at the New York Open Center, 22 East 30th Street. And you can register for this free introductory class on Thursday, January 18th at opencenter.org. Excuse me, or you can call 212-219-2527. And it's an introduction to a 5-part series, but you could check it out. And I invite you to join me on Mondays at 1 p.m. for Heart of Mind right here on WBAI. We've got to make room. Coming up for Hour of the Wolf, we played Enchantment by Alchemy. Now we're going to do Nagual by Michael Hewitt. Thank you, Matt, for joining me.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a weekly program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. With us for the second time in 6 months, yay, is Cassandra Caw. That's reason enough to just stay tuned and, well, frankly, never tune out. Keep with us.
Tamlin, she said, why came you here to dwell? The queen of fairies called me. And keep me out of sight.